Hello, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mitchell, he's Slim.
Hi.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch list, all under 30 minutes, or Tim Roth will show up at our doorsteps.
Mitchell, this could be the biggest episode we've ever done. Rebecca Hall's unsettling Resurrection is getting a limited release starting this weekend. Not Okay is hitting Hulu, and BJ Novak stars and directs Vengeance, where he plays a podcaster. Is that our dream movie? Movie about podcasters?
I think, you know, I mean, we'll find out a little bit later if it's our dream movie or our nightmare movie. Thank you. Pause for laughter, pause for applause.
I don't think we have a laugh track. It's not in the budget for this week. There's not enough time also.
I just like to fill in the space there for the people at home listening. You don't want, they're laughing so hard, you know. They don't want us to be chattering while they're going through. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Something major before we even get into the show officially, and for 1 week only. If you've been on the fence about upgrading to Letterboxd Pro or Patron, this is your moment. You can upgrade at 20% off the normal price using code WATCHLIST. So to make it easier, just click the link in the episode notes and it will automatically apply the discount to the page and you can upgrade from there. Otherwise, go to letterboxd.com/pro and enter the code WATCHLIST and get $4 off Pro or $10 off Patron for the year. Mitchell, what are your favorite Pro or Patron features on Letterboxd?
Yes, there are two big ones for me. First, I got to get those stats. I love those sweet, sweet stats. Slim, I have a general idea of what movies I'm kind of going to be watching for the next week or so, generally things for like work or whatever. And I stay up at night thinking about all those films, what actors are in them, who's directing them, and how that's going to impact my stats.
Oh.
That's a big one for me. The other big one, I love the watchlist emails. You know, this is Weekend Watchlist. We're getting people to put stuff on their watchlist. We use our watchlist. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't used to use my watchlist until they introduced this feature where, you know, we can, if Pro Patreon members can select their own favorite streaming services. So you can like tailor your own Letterboxd page to when you go to the films page, you see where those films are streaming on the streaming services that you have access to. Mm. And if you're a Pro Patreon member, now you get an email anytime a film on your watch list becomes like newly available on one of your streaming services. And it is essential to me. As I said, I did not used to use my watch list. When that got introduced, I was like, all right, I gotta start using it. Now I'm up to 1,307 movies on my watch list.
God.
So
help
thank
us
you
all,
for
please.
Creating that problem. How about you? What are your favorites?
We talked about Mubi last week. So you can set Mubi as one of your preferred streaming services and get notified when your movies on your watch list are now available.
Which
on Mubi.
I do.
Shudder, Peacock. Services. You know, we're big Peacock fans here.
Big
we're always on
Peacock.
Peacock
heads.
Always on Peacock. So now you can see when those movies are on Peacock. But no ads. We haven't talked about it, but no ads.
No ads.
Maybe people love those ads. That's great, too. But if you become a Pro or Patreon member, get rid of those ads, babe.
I was a Pro Patreon member, but then I was missing those ads. So I just, I got rid of my Patreon.
And that's fine, too. Also, if you become a patron, you get that fancy backdrop on your profile, and your reviews also get backdrops. So
lists too.
Oh my God, the list looks so good with those backdrops. So as we mentioned before, watch list is the code, or use the link in the episode notes to take care of that for yourself. So later in this episode, throughout the episode, actually, we'll be spotlighting community reviews tagged Weekend Watch List, and we'll get to the bottom of what happens, Mitchell, when you're married to the mob just a bit later.
Some stuff really does go down. But first, let's dive into the films that are coming out this week. You know, people might be a little bit confused that Mia's not here this week. Maybe they expected her. Mia feeling a little bit under the weather. So I tapped in for her. All the best to Mia. Hopefully her cat, Brad, is letting her sleep past 5:30 a.m. this morning, getting some nice rest to feel better.
Get well, Mia.
Get well, Mia. But so she was sad to miss out on this week's episode because she is a huge fan of our first film, Resurrection, directed by Andrew Siemens, coming out in limited theaters this weekend on 23,000 Letterboxd watch lists. The synopsis, a woman's carefully constructed life is upended when an unwelcome shadow from her past returns, forcing her to confront the monster she's evaded for two decades. Slim, what are your vibes on Resurrection?
Oh my God. When this was like hitting the circuit, the letterbox circuit. You know, there was some kind of festival this was coming out at. Everyone was talking about Resurrection. So now it's time for, you know, people like me, the everyman, to see this. And I did see it with a screener, so maybe I'm not the everyman. But hell yes to this movie. I thought the whole thing was unsettling. Does anyone go as hard as Rebecca Hall right now? Does anyone go as hard as Rebecca? I don't think so.
Absolutely not.
There's also just one note. There's like one shot in this where she's telling a story and it's like an uninterrupted like 8 minute shot of her and the camera's slowly zooming in on her. I love this movie. It's frightening and I highly recommend it. What did you think?
Yeah, so I saw it at Sundance and it was one of my favorite films at Sundance. It's one of my favorite films of the year so far. I am all in on Rebecca Hall. I've been all in on Rebecca Hall since like Starter for 10. In like the mid 2000s, which is like a, you know, low key British game show comedy. And now she is making movies like, this Christine, The Night House, just like the most like unsettling. Like, I think my Letterboxd review from Sundance was basically just like, I wish all the best to Rebecca Hall's therapist because I'm sure they're going through a lot. But yeah, that one scene, that monologue of her telling the story, which is basically her telling the whole backstory of her and this man who's played by Tim Roth in the film and like the abuse that he enacted upon her when she was younger. It's like, you know, it feels like a movie that's unfortunately too indie to pick up like the Oscar love that it deserves. But I feel like that scene alone should get her an Oscar for this movie. Like it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such an unsettling movie. Tim Roth basically playing the devil, as far as I'm concerned, like the nastiest bastard I've ever seen in a movie. I love Tim Roth. I spoke to him earlier this year, the nicest man in the world. After watching this movie, I would run the other way if I saw him on the street.
Yeah, Tim Roth plays, I mean, the ultimate villain this year. Ella's review, I was so into this. Wickedly good, nasty performances from Rebecca Hall and Tim Roth, but I also loved how the script is just constantly effing with someone and that seesaws between us and them all the time. Much to be said on gaslighting and mothering and protecting and leaving, but it's also just horrible fun to watch without thinking about any of it. So that was Ella's review.
We got a review from Zoe saying, Resurrection is a gloriously engrossing genre exercise elevated by deliriously dedicated Rebecca Hall, who gives one of her most persuasive and petrifying performances to date. It takes some time reaching its thrilling resolution, but Hall holds it all together even as the plot descends into preposterousness on occasion. There's nothing this woman can't do. Hard agree on that. Nothing Rebecca Hall cannot do.
Our queen. Let's move on to Hulu. This is now, you don't have to leave your couch to see the next movie that's dropping this weekend. Not Okay, directed by Quinn Shepard. It's on 12,000 watch lists. An ambitious young woman desperate for followers and fame fakes a trip to Paris to up her social media presence. When a terrifying incident takes place in the real world and becomes part of her imaginary trip, her white lie becomes a mortal quandary that offers her all the attention she's wanted. Now, I have seen this ahead of time. Mitchell have not. Have you heard any buzz about Not Okay? You know, you're boots on the ground. You hear from every direction about movies. What have you heard so far?
It's true. I've got all the buzz. I know what's going on. I have been hearing, you know, I mean, especially in the Letterboxd Slack, there's talk about Not Okay. I think the big buzz coming from the cast is like stacked. Zoe Deutsch, we all love, is the lead in it. Dylan O'Brien apparently playing a bit of an F-boy in this one. But yeah, the person that I'm super excited for now, who was a name that I didn't know until watching Don't Make Me Go, which we covered, you know, a few weeks ago, Mia Isaac, who was the co-lead in that movie with John Cho, she's in this. And hearing buzz from people who have seen it, that she's really great in this as well, which has not surprised me at all. She was phenomenal in Don't Make Me Go. So I'm super stoked to see her in this. You've seen it. How's Mia Isaac in Not Okay?
I want to join the Mia Isaac fan club. I don't know if it exists, but I need to be the founding member of the Mia Isaac. She steals the movie again. So it's like almost like 2 weeks in a row, she's got a movie out where she's my favorite part of it. Anytime you follow a cringe social media person in a movie with like no self-awareness, scenes are going to be like really uncomfortable. But having said that, I thought Mia stole the movie and the journey of the lead overall of someone who gets so deep in a lie that they have to hopefully learn from it, hopefully, and maybe deal with it and themselves. I thought the whole journey was worthwhile for sure. Yeah. But just going in, you know, she pretends that she's in Paris and there is like a domestic attack. There's like a terrorist attack at Paris where she was faking that she was there. So she leans into that and like, it's really heavy. So she like leans in and says like, I was there. Yes, look at me. I'm now famous. And she befriends Mia, who was actually a part of something similar in the past. And everyone probably is already uncomfortable thinking about how that's going to unfold for the characters towards the end of the movie when the truth is revealed. And it does feel that way. But overall, I think it's probably an important story to tell. So maybe check this out on Hulu this weekend.
Yeah, that sounds very cringe, very cringe core.
Super cringe. And I can confirm the F-boy status in the movie as well. F-boy status confirmed for Not Okay.
Well, let's take a peek into what I assume is our own not too distant future with Vengeance, directed by BJ Novak, who people know from The Office. The film is coming out in theaters this weekend. It's on 8,000 watch lists. The synopsis: Ben, a journalist and podcaster, travels from New York City to West Texas to investigate the death of a girl he was hooking up with. Slim, let's hear it. How realistic to the podcast life is Vengeance? God.
I mean, we're talking about cringe characters. We're just rolling on. Ben is so cringy at the start of this movie. For most of this movie, there's a couple great lines. Not every white guy in New York needs a podcast. Dead white girl, the holy grail of podcasts. It was darker than I was anticipating. You kind of think like BJ Novak directing his own movie, it's going to be like a hoot, like The Office. And I guess it sort of is, but it's way darker than that and more drama. What did you think?
Yeah, it definitely, like, I felt like it started off kind of like a little bit rough with the kind of the movie that you would expect, like a BJ Novak. Like BJ Novak, I would expect like a Garden State ripoff or something like that. Like that's the kind of vibe that like you would maybe think initially when you think like BJ Novak making a movie, especially if he had made it like during the height of The Office. But clearly, you know, he was more interested in like taking his time to do something really specific. And the movie starts off with a scene of him and John Mayer on like a rooftop with John Mayer, like bemoaning how he could never be monogamous. And I'm like, oh God, what is this movie gonna be? But yeah, then it takes that shift into exploring the podcasty nature of it and the like crime nature of it. And it is like, it's really cringy. And I didn't enjoy watching it for like the first half. But then like the second half, I think starts to really interrogate that. And I think has a knowledge of him being, you know, that kind of guy. So I think it definitely gets more interesting the further it goes along. And you kind of have to like sit with it to get to that point, I guess.
Yeah, I think for people that liked S-Town, that serial spinoff podcast,
you
might enjoy this. So one review we'll spotlight before going on to a fourth movie, believe it or not, this week.
Doing it.
Joe, in many ways, Vengeance feels like a long episode of The Office, a ridiculous premise centered around an arrogant and oblivious protagonist. Vengeance even has the trademark humor just slightly darker. So that's hitting theaters this weekend. All right, so I mentioned a fourth movie. We're breaking the rules. We're already running out of time, but we do want to spotlight one more movie, A Love Song, which is hitting limited theaters. Max Walker Silverman, 3,000 watch list, two childhood sweethearts, now both widowed, share a night by a lake in the mountains. That's it. That's the synopsis. And I heard there was some buzz in Letterboxd about this movie, so I made time this morning to watch it. My word. 4.5 stars. I think this has been said in other reviews, but this was like my Nomadland. I didn't love Nomadland, but I loved Love Song.
Yeah, so I saw this one at Sundance as well. Big week for great Sundance movies coming out. I remember like the first half of Sundance this year, I was just like not vibing with. I was seeing a lot of movies that just weren't hitting for me. And I was like, oh, is Sundance a flop this year? I guess Sundance, you know, the wheels have come off. Sundance is over and done with. And then about halfway through the week, I watched this one and it just like was such a huge turning point for me where I was like, oh, this is what a Sundance movie should be. Just like quiet, reflective, a little quirky in just the right places and anchored by two incredible performances by veteran actors who don't often get this sort of showcase. Dale Dickey and Wes Studi, the two leads in this, they are so fantastic. Yeah, it's just, it's such a tender, sweet movie. It's like so sad in the right places, but also really funny. There's my Letterboxd review of it from Sundance was just a single sentence I quoted from the film, which is a line that shows up and brought me to a puddle of tears. This line that says, whatever time you have, that's enough. And it just, when that happened in the movie, I was just a wreck.
God, so was I. I loved when that line came up, that scene of the movie. It's very breezy. You know, it's very loose. And I said,
yeah, it's like 80 minutes, right?
80 minutes. You know, there's a lot of beautiful scenic shots, just kind of her contemplating, thinking, just chilling there, listening to the radio. Yeah. And in my review, I said, that's camp life, baby. That's, you know, life, you're sitting there, you're listening to music, you're just chilling, looking around. So if this is playing near you in theaters, definitely make time to see it. I sounds like we both give it very high recommendations. Daniel's review, a miniature masterpiece of melancholy, gifting the great Dale Dickey with one of her best roles. The chemistry between her and Wes Studi is palpable. The script may be minimalist, but they maximize it, wringing every drop of poignancy out of it. Absolutely gorgeous on every level. What a review from Daniel. Bravo.
Great review from Daniel. I'll tell you what, people, everybody, check out double feature Resurrection followed by A Love Song, because you are going to want to see a movie like A Love Song after you get through Resurrection. It's just a movie that tears you absolutely apart, and then A Love Song just puts you back together.
All right, so let's look back at last week. Big release last week. Nope came out. It's sitting at a 4.0 average. Bianca, Nope is dope. Summer blockbuster, but make it peel. I love Nope. I gave it 5 stars. I was getting very big Amblin vibes. We've talked about it, I think, a few times on the Letterboxd show, where if you watch like Gremlins and Jaws and Poltergeist now, you're kind of like, what genre is this? Because it's like somehow all ages, but also scary and a drama. So I was getting Amblin vibes from Nope. So Jordan Peele, and that guy on Twitter got roasted for saying he was like the greatest horror director of all time. But is he right? Is he right?
I mean, Kev, we got a review here from Kev who says, okay, sure, Jordan Peele is a master of horror. So Kev keeps going on here. Any self-proclaimed movie buff has known this for years, but how about the Spielberg vibes all over the place? Gave me chills. At one point, Peele chooses to cut to black, still playing audio, in order to convey some pretty shocking stuff. The long shot and scene that follows is the scariest thing I think I have ever seen in a movie. Probably a 6 or 7 star theatrical experience. We got to adjust the coding on Letterboxd.
Because of Kev's review, we will adjust it for Nope and allow for 7 stars. The Gray Man, just real quick, we have to talk about The Gray Man. I had a great time. Oh, maybe not great time. I had a good time with The Gray Man. 3 stars. I had a very good time. 2.8 average. This is, what was that other movie with Chris Pine that I liked that started
All the Old Knives? First of all, the fact that you can't even remember the name of it, I think, even though you're allegedly the one in its corner.
I think I gave it 4 stars, too. So The Gray Man, we'll spotlight. Let's see. Let's just spotlight one review. Mason, this isn't Chris Evans acting. He's being possessed by an evil mustache that's taken over him like the Simpsons Halloween episode with Snake's hair. He must have been starving because he was chewing that scenery. Go see The Gray Man on Netflix and judge for yourself. Okay?
The Gray Man, I mean, The Gray Man just got greenlit for a sequel. Ryan Gosling getting that franchise game. And also Netflix put out that it is like, I think, the 5th most like streamed premiere on Netflix, right behind Kissing Booth 3. So you got Kissing Booth 3 and then The Gray Man. So
can you imagine if Ryan Gosling unseated Red Notice and The Rock had to make that? He had to do one of his little IG videos. He's like, brother, I'm going to give you a toast using my special tequila, brother. We'll see you at Red Notice 2 and then we'll do this again. Yada, yada, yada.
Crossover. Where's the Red Notice, Gray Man?
I'm deleting that from the episode. I do not want any kind of crossovers like that. What do you want to spotlight for this past week?
So I would like to spotlight on HBO Max, the new miniseries, The Last Movie Stars. All 6 episodes are streaming now. Ethan Hawke directs this thing. It's a doc celebrating Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward's iconic careers and decades-long partnership. Per the synopsis, director Ethan Hawke brings life and color to this definitive history of their love, lives, and philanthropy. I haven't finished this yet. I've watched the first couple episodes, and I'm really just super into it. And everybody that I know, including our own Gemma, really is just like totally vibing with it. It feels like a great celebration of these actors, but then also it kind of gets into like not only their stardom, but also just their relationship and how the two of them really supported each other across like their lives once they got together, and how like the love story is the thing that really makes them endure the most. Mm-hmm. We've got this beautiful interview with Ethan Hawke on Journal Now from Isaac Felberg that really like gets into that, the core of the series being about that love story. And so, yeah, everybody, it's on HBO Max now. So I definitely recommend people checking that out.
Great poster too. One other movie I want to spotlight from last week, Anything's Possible, which is sitting at a 3.1 average. We're at the Gemma line, that dream average for movies that everyone would want to see. And Sam, I want to spotlight Sam's review. I love cheesy teen dialogue. I love trans joy. Anything's Possible. You were able to finally check that out, weren't you?
I did actually. Yeah, I watched it with Sam the other day. And yeah, it definitely feels, as you said when we talked about it, it definitely feels like a movie that's geared specifically towards teens. And watching it, I feel like that's great because I think that's the demographic that it's most important and exciting to think about seeing something like this. It's a film that really will allow young trans people to feel seen, and then young cis people the opportunity for kind of education and insight into how they can better help their trans peers feel seen. And the two lead performances in it are phenomenal. They are like, the chemistry between them is just so lovely. And yeah, I really, really like it. I definitely recommend people checking it out. It's on Amazon Prime now, which is where I was watching it.
Prime does it again.
There we go. Sorry, take that, Peacock. we don't have to include
Listen,
that.
Peacock, if you want to sponsor the show in the future, don't worry. We're always listening, Peacock. Don't worry about that.
Well, let's do a quick check-in on the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022 list curated by Jack Maltin to see what is at the top of the list for things released this year. See if we got any updates on the list this year. Nope. Where's Notepad, Slim?
Number 12. And according to Jack, this is about as well as Us did in 2019 with less competition that ended up falling down the list. And Get Out debuted at number 2, challenging at the time the number 1 Call Me By Your Name for a bit. So moving fast, it's moving up. Where will it end? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Now, usually in this segment of the show, we go through the movies that we shuffled in our own watch list. We talked about the discounted upgrade to Letterboxd Pro or Patreon, by the way. Use the code watchlist. Use the link in our episode notes so that you too can filter your watch list by your favorite streaming services. Now, last week I shuffled and I got, they call me Mr. Tibbs. And I started to get nervous like right away. This is the sequel to In the Heat of the Night. Sidney, Rod, Warren. They're in that original one. Norman Jewison. This one I gave 1.5 stars. Oof. This is like a dud TV movie. It almost doesn't even exist in the same world that In the Heat of the Night was made. And I don't even want to talk about it anymore. 1.5 stars. But if you want to continue the Tibbs journey, you can, because there is a third one. They made a third one. I just think it's fascinating that like this exists as a sequel to that movie. It might be one of the worst sequels in the history of film. If you want to check it out, it's streaming on Pluto and Tubi. By all means, check it out, but not for me. What did you shuffle and get last week?
Yeah, so I got Married to the Mob, the Jonathan Demme picture from the 80s, which was good. A fun time. I scrambled to watch it last night because we got the word from Mia that she wasn't feeling too good. So I stepped in, but I was like, you know, I got to watch this movie. I have to fulfill my duties. And yeah, I mean, it's a fun kind of late night watch. It reminded me of like a cross section of Desperately Seeking Susan and Demme's film Something Wild, which are both films that I really love. Those two feel a little bit like fuller and maybe more in charge of their tricky tones for me. So this didn't quite hit like those marks for me, but it's still, I think, a solid like 3.5. Any movie that has an end credit montage set to New Order's Bizarre Love Triangle, I don't think can get less than 3.5 for me. I think that's like in the law. I think that's just law. It's definitely, I mean, it's got like a stacked cast. Michelle Pfeiffer is the lead in it. She's sensational. Dean Stockwell got his only ever Oscar nomination for it. But I think my favorite performance in the film is Mercedes Rule, who plays Stockwell's wife. And she's just like totally unhinged in it. She's such a blast. She's like one of those characters that anytime she shows up on screen, you just like immediately like perk up. Have you seen Married to the Mob?
I've never seen Married to the Mob, but Michelle looks fantastic in these backdrops. Yeah. I love Michelle Pfeiffer.
Love
great,
her.
Great actor.
Love her to death. My Catwoman. Well, the Catwoman I grew up with, anyway.
Yeah, all Catwoman deserve props. Yeah, I'm here. I'm true. Here.
There's
I'm
been
here
a lot
Halle
of Catwomen.
There have been a lot.
There's
of
been Catwomen. A lot of Catwomen. There's been like 7 Catwomen. Catwomen. Has anyone ever said Catwomen out loud? I feel strange even saying. All right. So before we shuffle again, let's spotlight some weekend watch list tagged reviews. Mogwai Synth's Eraserhead review. Well, my parents never technically gave me the talk when I was young, but I have seen Eraserhead. So I'd say I got a pretty good idea where babies come from. I don't think I've seen Eraserhead, believe it or not.
Check out Eraserhead and get back to us on the next episode. The Eraserhead baby is in film lore for a very good reason. That baby is
streaming on HBO Max and Criterion. Because I can tell that because I'm a pro member at least, so I can see where it's streaming right now.
Well, let's shout out one more review tagged we can watch this. Let's shout out KK Sliders on the basis of sex review. Disappointing film as someone who tremendously admired the work done by RBG, both as a lawyer and her time on the court. It simply doesn't do justice to her impact she had on many, although knowing the oversight she had on the screenplay, I can appreciate the level of authenticity.
All right, let's head to our watch list. Let's go. Let's see. I'm going to scroll down right now. Head to watch list. I am going to filter because I can stream only among my favorite services. And I'm going to hit shuffle, sort by shuffle. And this is the movie I need to watch before the next episode. Oh, my. Dennis Hopper, Jodie Foster, Dean Stockwell, Catch Fire, 1990.
Absolutely.
What? Absolutely. When murder is your business, you'd better not fall in love with your work. This is directed by allegedly Dennis Hopper and Alan Smithy. So I wonder what the backstory is behind the making of this film.
Yeah, there's a lot of backstory. There's actually 2 different cuts of that film now and it's gone by 2 different names. There's Catch Fire. It also goes by the name Backtrack, which I think is the name for like Hopper's version of it. Cause he has a director's cut that eventually came out. That yeah, it's more his version of it, but yeah, he had to throw in that Alan Smithy on the official release of it because he wasn't too happy with it. Definitely stoked for you to see that.
All right, what did you get? What did you shuffle and get?
I got a film that I know Jack recently watched and was recommending in our Letterboxd meetings, Wake and Fright, the Australian film from 1971, directed by Ted Kotcheff. The tagline: "Have a drink, mate. Have a fight, mate. Have some dust and sweat, mate. There's nothing else out here." I'm super stoked for this. It's streaming on Mubi and on Tubi. So we got both of the Ubies for people to check that one out on. I'm really stoked for this. My friend Jen Johan saw it, maybe has seen it a long time ago, but recently she compared it to After Hours, which is my favorite film of all time. So I'm very stoked to check this one out.
And Jen has a podcast, right? Watch with Jen.
Watch with
Anyone,
Jen.
Anyone wants to check that out, by all means.
I have been on that podcast. We did an episode together talking about Jim Jarmusch.
I've seen your name associated with that podcast.
Yeah.
Seen it several times with Jen's name in my Twitter feed, by the
check
way.
It out.
Is there 2 cuts of your movie? Just my movie is the only one with 2 cuts floating around?
Actually, I think there are 2 cuts. There was some controversy in the Letterboxd Slack recently about we had like a poster for it on Letterboxd was the one associated with like a recut of it or something like that. So weird vibes in the watch the shuffle this week.
Controversy abound. We'll find out when we watch these movies. Thank you so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mitchell, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And don't forget, speaking of episode notes, to use the special code 20% off 1 week only so that you too can become a pro or patron member of Letterboxd.
Gotta get those stats.
Gotta get
those
stats.
Thanks to our crew. And thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Wallen for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And thanks to you for listening. Weekend Watch List is a Tape Deck production.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.